WXSR 91.7 FM, Memphis, Tennessee.
Good morning and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. And every Thursday morning, we have the opportunity to interview really interesting people to learn about what's happening in their life and also the role of faith in their life. And we are broadcast from 91.7 FM right here in Crosstown Concourse. So each Thursday, we begin with a saint of the day. And a saint is really an ordinary person who has done extraordinary things during the course of their life. And yesterday, we celebrated the feast of Saint Patrick of Ireland. And so I thought I would tell you a little bit about St. Patrick's story, give you a little more details instead of just a person that you can use an excuse to have some green beer in the middle of Lent. So Patrick was actually born into a Christian family in Great Britain, probably around the year 390. His grandfather was a priest and his father was actually a deacon. When he was 16 years old, he was captured by a band of Irish slave raiders and he was carried off to Ireland and he was forced to serve as a shepherd for about 6 years. And during this time, as you might imagine, being a shepherd, he was sort of out in the fields by himself a lot, and he really turned to religion for solace and did become a devout Christian during that time. So after about 6 years of being imprisoned, Patrick decided that he was going to escape, and he believed that it was the voice of God telling him to do this. And so he walked about 200 miles to the Irish coast, where he was finally reunited with his family back in Great Britain. He then began religious training and education. And then another vision from the Lord invited him, compelled him perhaps, to return to Ireland, the place where he had been held as a prisoner. And so he went back. There were already a few Christians on that island, but what he really did was to promote the Christian faith. So because he had been held in captivity, he knew the Irish language and culture. And his approach was to incorporate traditional Irish beliefs into Christianity instead of trying to eradicate all of the indigenous Irish beliefs. For example, Patrick used bonfires to celebrate Easter because the Irish were accustomed to honoring their gods with fire. And he also superimposed an image of the sun onto the Christian cross to create a version of what we would now call a Celtic cross, because the sun was a really powerful Irish symbol. Something else that Patrick is credited with doing is actually teaching the Irish about the doctrine of the Trinity by showing them a shamrock, which is a three-leafed plant. And he used those three leaves to show that there are three persons, but one God. So through all of his efforts, many, many, many people were converted to Christianity. And so we remember Patrick because he was someone who went through an incredibly challenging experience, turned to the Lord for comfort and solace in the midst of it, And then even though he was free and back home in Britain, decided to return to spread the good news of Jesus Christ in the land where he had been formerly held as captive. So perhaps next year, when you are thinking about celebrating the feast of St. Patrick, you will remember his significance as ordained person and evangelist, in addition to just a reason to have a fun afternoon off. And so now we're going to play. I'll let you know that all of the songs from today have been selected by one of our guests. And so we're going to go to the first song now. So we are back on Faithfully Memphis, and I am really pleased to have not one, but two special guests in the studio with me this morning, Cindy McMillan and Justin Brazil. So let me tell you a little bit about both of them. From 2014 to 2017, Cindy was involved in the Connecting Memphis Community Storytelling Project. And during that time, she collected stories and photos from more than 12,000 people, I believe. 1,200 people from all walks of life. And that has resulted in a 15-volume set that you can purchase on Amazon or, I believe, can see at the Central Public Library and read the stories online. And one of the persons that Cindy interviewed was Justin Brazil, a man with his own amazing story. Justin is a Navy veteran. He's an international motivational speaker and works with the Grizzlies Foundation. So good morning to Cindy and Justin, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So this is a show about faith. And I thought we would start out by, I'd ask each of you, maybe we'll start with you, Cindy, to share a little bit about the role of faith in your life when you were growing up as a child.
I always went to church when I was growing up, but didn't really have a mature faith until much later. I would say probably during my college years, and it's grown since then. And this particular project that I worked on was a huge part of my faith growth also. Mm-hmm. It motivated it, but yet it helped it grow in some ways that I had not expected.
Wow. So would you just share maybe one or two ways that your faith grew from your interactions with all these folks? I imagine from every single walk of life.
Yes. I talked to people from many walks of life who were different from me, maybe economically, racially, culturally, age-wise, and so on. And one of the principles that I had when I went out is I'm not going to ask anybody about faith. I'm not going to ask mm-hmm. anybody about God. I'm certainly not going to ask anybody about politics.
Right.
But the answers that they gave to questions such as, can you talk about a challenge that you faced in your life? Or who is a hero to you? Those questions elicited responses that I didn't expect. And many, many of them talked about their faith in God and how God had helped them through the various struggles in their life. And I started to see faith in places that I just frankly had not expected to find it. Mm-hmm. And it broadened my view of who God is and how God interacts with us and how much He loves us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Justin, you know, you have a really powerful story, especially, I would say, around the age of 10. So I wondered if you might, as you talk about the role of faith when you were a child, maybe share with the audience the events that transpired when you were 10 years old.
Okay. Growing up as a child, just as Cindy stated, that I grew up in a household that went to church often, mm-hmm. Sundays, Wednesdays, and so forth. And faith was, I could say, it was heavy in our family. Mm-hmm. And to go as what happened to me is when I was younger, is around 9 years old, I was being bullied. Mm-hmm. And it ended up culminating to the point where 10 years old, on June 5th, 1993, I was set on fire by the hands of the bully. And I was burned over 63% of my body. Well, 53% of my body. I ended up having over 63 surgeries from the age of 10 to 18 years old. And in that time, I couldn't go outside for about 5 years due to the condition of my skin. So I just sat in my room a lot. And as I used to watch TV, a commercial came on. When a commercial came on, it was saying, be all you can be. I said, you know what, I want to be that. And at the age of 12, I started training to try to become a member of the United States Navy. Mm-hmm. Well, the military. I didn't know I was going to be in the Navy and choose the Navy. And it started off with just one push-up at a time. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do one, but eventually I worked my way up. And on September 11, 2001, while attacks were happening, I was signing my contract to join the military. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how things work out.
Yes.
And that's where I can say I was tested, because I made it to a point where I wanted to be, but it was this huge obstacle because I understood what was going to come from this. But as a man, I signed up and I joined and mm-hmm. continued on. And one day when I was sitting in my room, I remember my brother was going outside playing, and he came into the house one day and my mother said, boy, you smell like outside. And I want to smell like outside so bad. But that day, I remember I said, whenever I'm able to go outside, I'm going to go out and see as much as possible. And I've touched every continent on this planet except for Antarctica. I've traveled 49 states. I think I've circled the world, I think, 7 times.
Wow.
The amount of miles traveled while I was in the service. And it's just been a blessing of life. Just as like we was talking about earlier, my book, I have a book coming out. That's why I named it The Cursed Blessing.
The Cursed Blessing.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. So you see the blessing, and yet there was a journey to get to that point.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. You know, for me, sometimes I only can glimpse God's hand at work in my life in retrospect. Like when I'm in the middle of a difficult situation, I think it's human to sometimes ask, well, Lord, why am I here and why me? But sometimes years later, as I look back, I can see that there was a pattern, a guiding. And I wonder, for each of you all, looking back on any portion of your life, has it become clearer how God was moving?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, that why me moment came to me one day. One of my good friends, she's a huge Christian. She is so deep into it and understanding this of faith. And one day she asked me to come to Ripley, Tennessee to speak. And I went up there. This is the first time I ever stood in front of a crowd. I used to didn't like anybody staring at me, looking at me for years. And this was my test. So I went up there on stage. I ended up being a keynote speaker the first time I ever spoke. And when I tell you, I forgot my whole life when everybody was looking at me. But when I got done, the amount of people that came up to me, there was young children that was coming up to me saying I was being bullied. And I'm glad to see that someone came out of it. And also there was adults coming up to me saying, I was so depressed about my life, but you make my life look like a cakewalk. Let me go and figure some things out myself. And me, I'm the type of guy that has my windows down, music up loud, enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
Because this is about a 30-minute drive from Ripley to Memphis. And on this day, I just didn't feel like having any music on. It was a calm in the car. And on that ride, there was a question answered that I asked for so many years, and that was, why me? And the answer that came to me was, it was because I was able to take it. So things in your life, there's a path placed for you already in life. And you will go through different things, different tests, different stages. And it's just to see if you are ready for what is there for you. And I remember I cried. I cried for about 30 minutes. But it was like this weight was lifted off my shoulders. A headache went away that was just in the center of my head for years. And it pushed me on the path. It pushed me on the path to this young lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because right after that, I was asked to become a mentor. And I was, at first I was like, I'm not perfect. I don't think I need to do this. But that was like, come on. I think your story is powerful. I think you can help the children in this program. And I said, you know what? Okay, I'll do it. And that was one of the best things I've ever done in my life. After the first time I ever mentored a child, I stopped doing everything that I shouldn't have been doing in the first place. And that led me to the point where I was interviewed for Connecting Memphis. And from there, I remember she told me after we got done, she was like, this is going to come out in 2 weeks. I said, okay, all right. And the day that it came out, I was just getting off work at FedEx. And I was heading to the car and I got the first notification from my friend. She shared the story. And I was like, oh, this is nice. I read it. I was like, oh, I'm so important. I look at how important it is. But I remember I went to sleep and I woke up at 7 o'clock and it was just my phone was buzzed, and I had so many missed calls, so many text messages, and I looked at Facebook, and I was like, I seen a number pop across. I was like, that cannot be right.
What was the number, Justin?
It was like 1,000.
Yeah.
I was like, let me go back to sleep. And when I woke up, because I had to mentor that day, it was like 2,000, 3,000, somewhere around there. And I had like 100 missed calls. I had all types of text messages. And I was like, let me look at this. And when I started seeing all these people just saying, you helped my life. You changed mm-hmm. me, and, you know, giving me praise and thank yous and so forth. And when I made it to mentoring, they were telling me that I had crashed the website, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
That's what they told me. I was told that from my story. And from there, that's what spawned my speaking career.
Yes.
People from all over the world. I had to use Google Translate for some of the messages that mm-hmm. I was receiving from different countries, from different people. And they were asking me, can I come speak? And can I come here? And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And it led me to here today.
Wow. So, Cindy, you did so many interviews. You know, what is it about Justin's story, do you think, that struck a chord in you and obviously in so many other people?
Justin's story did impact me a lot. And I think it's because most of us in our lives have been bullied.
Yes.
At some level, whether it was mean girls mm-hmm. or whether it was mm-hmm. Physically bullied when we were kids. And so a lot of us relate to that. And I think the going through a challenge where it just seems insurmountable, like he could have died from his burns, but other challenges that many of us face in our lives, we feel like that could have killed us too.
Yes.
And so to see him face that with courage and then turn it around and say, I'm going to turn this into an opportunity. And then ultimately to forgive that person, to me, I looked at Justin in his story and I thought, this is what a man looks like.
Mm-hmm.
This is what a human being should look like.
Mm-hmm.
Facing challenges, going through difficulties, turning them into opportunities, and then being able to forgive. It's really beyond what I think I could do, but it gives me something to aspire to. And so I wanted his story to be out there because I thought, I'm not the only one that needs to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I felt about many of the stories that I put out. But Justin's, for some reason, seemed to hit a lot of those particular points that we struggle with, so many of us. And I thought this could help some folks,
mm-hmm.
Not only kids, but adults. And, you know, I'm 63 years old. It's still helping me when I think about facing challenges. I think, okay, Justin did this. And his story often comes to my mind mm-hmm. to keep trying.
Yeah. So what was your hope when you started the project for Connecting Memphis?
Well, I had met different people along during my career as a teacher from different parts of the city, and I thought these stories need to be told. But really the base, I think, goes back a whole lot longer than that, a whole lot further than that. When I was in my mid-30s, I became a foster parent for the state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had four children in a row. And then my fifth child, I told the social worker, I said, I've never had a baby. I'd love to have a baby. And so she called me one day and said, here's this baby. Well, that was also my first black child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the home that I had grown up in, I had heard a lot of racial slurs through my life. My parents were a product of the times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of nervous about doing that. Because I didn't know what my father's reaction would be. In fact, my mother said it was almost Christmas time when my child was born. And he was 3 weeks old, and I was going to go home for Christmas. And my mother was open, you know, receptive, but she said, I don't know if you need to bring him home. Mm. She said, can you find somebody for him to stay with? Because I don't know how your dad's going to respond. Well, I said, no. I said, if he's not coming, I'm not coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, well, come on. So we went I went home, and the first thing I did was sit down beside my dad on the couch with my baby. And I said, just give me your hand.
Yeah.
I want you to touch his arm. I want you to touch his face. I want you to know him. And in that moment, I saw my dad melt. Mm-hmm. He was smitten with that child from then on. And I realized the reason he had his attitude is he didn't have relationships across racial lines. That's what changes people. This is just my opinion, but I don't think legislation and petitions and movements and all this can hold a candle to relationships. Mm-hmm. That once you reach across those lines and connect with a person and say, I'm in relationship with this person, I think that's when we see through each other's eyes and we see that image of God. And carry that forward, you know, this is many years later. Of course, my child has grown by then. He's 25 now and has a family of his own. But that carried, that story I was carrying with me for a long time. And I saw the different people in Memphis, different neighborhoods that maybe I would not normally have been in because my daily routines didn't carry me in those particular ways. You know, my path to work or my path to the grocery. But I retired, so I had some time, and I could have time to go in other places. And so I started conversations with a lot of people, and I realized that's the key. That's what's missing, is we just don't have those relationships with each other. We haven't seen each other, and let's tell the stories. And once people started telling their stories, talking about the struggles they've had in their lives, the loves they've had in their lives, the things that matter to them, I think that's what struck a chord with people, because they thought, that person's not different from me. On the outside, maybe economically they look different. Maybe racially they look different. Maybe they've been raised in a different religion, different culture. They're a whole different age from me. But they're like me. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we can move forward together.
You know, one of the things that I think that you all have in common, just in listening to you talk about how you've been to every continent except for Antarctica, and Cindy, you going into all these different neighborhoods, is you both seem to have an openness and a willingness to be in relationship with someone who is different. I think so many people are afraid of that. Do you have any thoughts? We'll start with you, Justin, for a person who really has had just a very small circle of family and friends, of people who look alike and think alike, who may never have really reached out to someone who is different, about how someone might take even a first step towards that forming of relationship.
Well, in my time in the Navy, I remember I hung around a small group of people, and just like that, you would have a small mind. You would only think so far. Mm-hmm. And as my time grew, reaching out and going to different countries and seeing different cultures and trying to learn about them and see how they live and how they move, it expanded me and it opened up my eyes to so many different parts of so many things in the world. You know, one of my kids that I mentor, they said that, well, this was in the past, that they've really never traveled that much. Mm-hmm. They never seen it. And some people that I speak to outside of there also, they said, like, what is the rest of the world like? Mm. So my thing for them is to, what I would tell them is to try something different. Go out and see things. Leave outside the country and go experience life. Because Memphis is its own place, its own right. But I remember when I went to move to Seattle, I took Memphis with me to Seattle. Hmm. I didn't take an open mind with me to Seattle. And there were so many people that were afraid of me. It's just how I carried myself. I had to learn how to open up and just try things. Mm-hmm. You know, I would tell someone just to go. I know we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
But when this is over, just go to Facebook events, just choose an event and go there and just see how the people are there. Talk to them. Find different interests in life. And I believe that it would improve you. It would improve your life. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said before, the best thing I've ever done before is mentor. And we have three mentors. And we are from all different parts of life.
Mm-hmm.
But we work well together. We talk. We build relationships. You never know what a stranger can bring into your life.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what can happen when you're doing something out your norm. Mm-hmm. It could be a blessing into your life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cindy, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think it takes courage. It's hard sometimes. It was hard for me. I'll admit that. Probably more because I'm quiet than because of anything else. But it was hard, and I would pray before I got out
mm-hmm.
of my car in any neighborhood. God, give me courage and help me see your image in other people. And that's what I prayed every time. And I think once I started hearing some of these stories, that encouraged me to find more and to talk to more people and to realize there's so much goodness out there. I think we live in such a divided climate now, really hateful climate, where we demonize people who don't agree with us on every point, when we really need to see that we're multidimensional. You can't sum up a person as one thing or another thing. And we have a whole lot more in common than we do not in common. And I love Justin's suggestion about just finding different events
mm-hmm.
to go to. I did some of that too, and that's where I found some of the people that I interviewed. And so I think that's a great idea. But just having some kind of willingness to look at another person and see the image of God in them. I found just as many interesting stories around people who do not have any place to call home, who are homeless, as I did with someone who was a doctor or a lawyer mm-hmm. or a judge or 100 years old or a musician or an artist or just a mom. And often it was people who thought, I don't have anything to say. And they did. And mm-hmm. sometimes they leave you with a gem that you just think, thank God I ran across as a person, because yeah. I know something now about life that I didn't know before, and it's because of them.
It sounds like Justin's story, right? You,
yes.
you were saying when someone invited you to be a mentor and you thought, I can't do this. I don't really have anything to offer. So maybe one of the ways that God works in our lives, I know certainly in my own journey to ordination, it wasn't something that I ever thought I could do, but it was someone else who saw the gift in me, who encouraged me, that gave me the courage and the confidence to do it. So maybe it's other folks God is sending into our lives to reflect things about us that we really can't see.
I think that's true. One of my great joys of doing this was to honor these people that I met, to hold them up, and just because often when they didn't think they had anything to say, just to hold their story up, hold that person up. And then when the comments would start pouring in to just encourage them and thank them for what they shared, you know, I got so much joy out of thinking, you know, this person is finally getting a little bit of recognition for. And I'm not famous. I can't give them a lot of recognition. I didn't make a movie out of them. But, you know, just to for them to have some moment of feeling honored.
Yeah.
That's what I really wanted to do. And mm-hmm. I was often so excited about posting a story. I posted one every day for 2.5 years on Facebook.
Wow.
And when a story was about to go live, I was so excited sometimes I just couldn't even sleep. You know, because I was so thrilled that story was going to be out there.
Cindy, you're making me think about one of the promises in our baptismal covenant that we will respect the dignity of every human being. And it sounds like you saw the essence of the dignity of every person you encountered on this journey.
Well, I feel like the basis of what I, the way I want to live my life, and this is more than enough challenge for my lifetime, is to love God with all my heart and love my neighbor as myself. I think that's going to keep me busy the rest of my life.
Yeah. So we've been talking about the Connecting Memphis Community Storytelling Project, which is sort of what brought the two of you together. But you all also each independently have some other things that you're working on. So Justin, I'll start with you. I understand that you mentioned earlier that you have a book and where you're seeing the blessings in the challenges of your life. Can you tell us a little bit about that project so that people can know to be on the lookout for it?
Yes, ma'am. The book will be coming out this year. Run into a few hiccups with it, but it's okay. We're going to work past that. The name of the book will be The Cursed Blessing. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's going to go through my whole life. And it's going to have, it's going to basically talk about the people who I've met and the roles that they've played in my life and the path that I've led in my life. Just like Cindy was saying earlier, I forgave the young man. I had to forgive him because he played his vital role in my life. If he wouldn't have never did that to me, I never probably would have joined the military. I'd never probably be out here speaking right now or speaking all over this world. So I just want to show people there's a silver lining in everything. Mm-hmm. It's just how you have, it's just how you look at the situation. Because years later, it might be the worst thing going on in your life right now, but years later, you can look back and be like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Mm. But that will be coming out this year. Maybe the third quarter.
Okay. And what was the process like for you as you were revisiting, you know, in your mind, all of these past experiences and then having to put them down on, I don't know, either paper or, you know, into a keyboard? What was the process of writing that?
It was rough. I actually stopped. I've been writing this book for about 10 years.
Okay.
And I actually had to go through therapy. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. I did a lot of crying. I did a lot of soul searching writing this book. But as they say, the more you talk about it, the easier it becomes, and it becomes therapy to you. And I needed to get that off my chest. Mm-hmm. I needed to get all of this off my chest and just to start fresh.
Right. So we're going to claim that the book is going to be published in 2021, but it sounds like, even if it isn't, the process itself for you was transformative to get it all out.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It was a cheap version of therapy. You know, but I believe everybody, like Cindy was saying, everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. And if we were able to write it down and put it out there, it'd give people understanding of who we are. Mm-hmm. An easier way for us to come together.
Mm-hmm. So, Cindy, I understand that your new project is going to be a series of interviews with octogenarians about spirituality in the second half of life. So what prompted you to take this on as a project?
I read one time a proverb, an African proverb, that said, when an old person dies, a library burns down.
Wow. Say that again.
When an old person dies, a library burns down.
Wow.
And I thought about the older people in the faith community and what they might want to pass on. Because once they're gone, all we have left are their stories. And I think they have a lot to say. And so right now I'm working on the getting it together as far as what questions I want to ask them. But I want to ask them about some of the challenges they face in their faith journey. I want to ask them, what things do they know now about a relationship with God that they didn't know when they were 20?
Hmm.
I want to ask, how do you one day want to be remembered? What would you want to pass on to younger people and to young families? So that's a project that's in the works, and as soon as we can get this pandemic out of the way and I can actually be with people more face-to-face, that's one thing that I want to explore and try to collect some of those faith stories as an encouragement for generations to come and as a way to honor the people who are in that second part of life. I guess I'm in the second part too now. But I want to start with people who are in their 80s and above.
Wow, that's amazing. And also, you know, just for the listening audience, Cindy is an amazing photographer. I think through her lens, she captures aspects of what might appear on the surface to be mundane, but the beauty and the dignity shines through. And so I know her through her work with Church of the Holy Communion and also with St. Mary's Cathedral's Wednesday morning service and feeding ministry to our homeless neighbors that we had before COVID hit. So if you have not followed Cindy on social media, you should, because her pictures are really profound.
Thank you.
So as we begin to wrap things up, I'd like to ask each of you all, you know, there's so much that we could be discouraged about, the state of affairs in the world, the personal pains that so many are going through. I wonder, what is giving you a sense of hope? You know, what is it that has you not giving in to despair as you just wake up each morning to go through your day?
Well, some mornings I do feel kind of despairing, I have to admit. But I think looking around at the goodness in the world, looking at people, even if I start out kind of feeling down because I'm tired of this pandemic as anybody else, and I'm tired of all the division in the country as much as anybody else. But to look at the goodness of people and the goodness of God, I think both of those things move me forward and move me into a better place.
What about you, Justin?
Just as we was talking about earlier, just look outside. Everything's blooming.
Yes.
So, in just a couple of weeks ago, nothing was there. Bare tree. Everything comes full circle. We just have to be patient enough to weather the storm, just like we had yesterday.
Yeah.
And everything's going to be sunny again. So it gives me hope to know everything in life is a cycle. It's going to be good. It's going to be bad. But we always have to find that silver lining.
I think one, I wanted to say this because one of the things, the reasons that that Bishop Phoebe, you and I began to talk was that the Connecting Memphis stories are now in print form. And I think they can be an encouragement to people to read through those sometimes when we do feel bad. They're online, connectingmemphis.com. They're on Facebook. And now there is a print version, which if you search by my name through Amazon, you can find it. It's a 15-book series, and it has all these stories in them. And sometimes I just like to pick them up and just look, and I see somebody's story, and it brings me back up to a good place because I remember that person has a beauty inside them, and here's their story, and I love their story, and it makes me feel better. So that's one little possibility.
Great. So thanks for letting us know the ways that we can learn more about this project. Justin, if people are interested in learning more about your story, how would they learn more about you or get in contact with you?
Well, you can actually Google, hop on Google. It's Justin Brazil, B-R-A-Z-I-L. Also, you can search that on Facebook, and that'll bring you up to my page. I'm on Instagram, JBrazil901. If you ever want to reach out to me and talk, if you ever have anything you want to talk about, I'm here.
Wow. Well, I want to thank the two of you all for, you know, your willingness to share your powerful story and your openness to the world and not looking at the world through rose-colored lenses, but also not being discouraged by everything that you've been through. And so I'm hoping that this interview will perhaps motivate at least one listener to consider a small step once we're past the pandemic and we don't have to be socially distanced, thinking about maybe even some of the food festivals, you know, like an Italian festival or a Greek festival or an Indian festival, you know, something from a very different culture to reach out and try to begin forming relationships. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My father could use a little mercy now. The fruits of his labor falling right slowly on the ground. His work is almost over. It won't be long. He won't be around. I love my father. He could use some mercy now. My brother could use a little mercy now. He's a stranger to freedom. He's shackled to his fear and his doubt. The pain that he lives in, it's almost more than living will allow. I love my brother. Could use some mercy now. My church and my country could use a little mercy now. As they sink into a poison pit, it's gonna take forever to climb. Carry the weight of the faithful who follow them down. I love my church and country. They could use some mercy now. Every living thing could use a little mercy now. Only the hand of grace can end the race towards another mushroom cloud. People in power, they'll do anything to keep their crown. Itself could use some mercy now. could use a little mercy now. I know we don't deserve it, but we need it anyhow. We hang in the balance, dangle between hell and hallowed ground. And every single one of us could use some mercy now. Every single one of us could use some mercy now. Every single one of us could use some mercy now.
So, what a wonderful, beautiful hymn as we conclude the show today. The next section is Stump the Bishop. And we've just heard a really profound conversation about the power of forgiveness. And one of the questions that I have gotten is, does the Episcopal Church have the sacrament of confession? We think about our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters, and you might have the image of, from a movie, or even if you are a Catholic yourself, of going into a small booth, and there's a small slit, and there's a priest on the other side, and the person is confessing to the father of the priest, is sort of standing in, and the person who's going to pronounce absolution on behalf of God. And in the Episcopal Church, we do have confession. It is included in our Book of Common Prayer, and it's called Reconciliation of a Penitent. And we don't have a little booth, but generally, the priest and the person seeking absolution will meet in the church or chapel or sometimes the priest's office and just sit side by side. And if you have never confessed your sins to another person, that is a very powerful experience in and of itself. Now, during our liturgy, on Sunday mornings, we always say the Lord's Prayer, which is each of us individually confessing what we have done to God. And we also have a corporate or general confession where we, as the body of the faithful, will confess collectively. But that is somewhat different from your own personal prayers, where you may list the specific areas where you have fallen short. It's a different thing altogether to say those things out loud to another human being and to pray together. And then if the priest determines, to receive absolution. When I was a parish priest, I both heard people's confessions, and I made my confession once a year, typically during the season of Lent, which is the season that we find ourselves in now, as part of my own spiritual discipline. And the only reason why a priest would not pronounce absolution is if there is an ongoing sin that the person is not willing to stop, especially if it's in the nature of abusing someone or, you know, embezzlement of money. If there's something that is still ongoing, the priest would probably want to see some signs that behavior is going to change. And I've, over the years, I've heard that sometimes priests have had to say, you know, let's get up right now and go to the police station, because this is something you've told me that I really feel that we need to have law enforcement involved, and I'm going to go with you to help you get through it. So it seems as if Justin Brazil, in his own way, has figured out a path to forgiveness from a very significant wound that I dare say many people would never get beyond. He's been able to do it and turn it into something so powerful and beautiful. And he's paying it forward by being a blessing for others. So perhaps in the remainder of this season of Lent, if there is something that is on your heart or mind, reach out to a member of the clergy if you are interested in confession. Thank you for listening to Faithfully Memphis. We want to encourage you to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Look for Faithfully Memphis and be sure to listen to us on those platforms as well. That helps us to get the word out there about this program. And we hope that the interviews that we engage in and the stories that we share can be an inspiration to others. So until next week, my brothers and sisters, stay safe and stay positive.